Everybody, and welcome to another edition of Pod Stallions. I am Brian, and as always, next to me, well, not really next to me, but next to me in my heart, is Jason.
Hello, everyone.
And we're going to talk about something that I'm very fond of, and Jason is also... I hope you're fond of this. We really didn't talk about it.
I have fond memories of it, but I think this is kind of more one of your things than mine, but
that's
we'll get
enough.
There.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot to talk about, and that is the 1980 television miniseries.
It was 1980, yeah, January of 80, I think, is when it hit. Yeah.
1980 television miniseries of Ray Bradbury's The Martian Chronicles, an epic three-night event on NBC. Thank God for Wikipedia. Jason, did you watch the show live?
Yes, I did, and I'll tell you why I know this and what my very first memory was. I'm not sure if I knew... I think I knew the name Ray Bradbury because of my mom. My mom is a big... still is, but, you know, she was a big science fiction... she read a lot of science fiction, big fan. So when I was a kid, I knew... I didn't really read this stuff, but I knew who Robert Heinlein was and Isaac Asimov and... Bradbury and people like that, because she was reading this stuff back in the 50s, you know, 50s and early 60s. And I think I kind of knew who Ray Bradbury was from one of her books. And the first time I was aware of what this thing was going to be on television, and I remember this, like, it's so vivid, like a lot of stuff we talk about on here, the sense memory stuff that we have. Mm. I was at my grandma's house, and someone had... this was in 1979. Someone had a copy of the new issue of People magazine, and there was a little snippet or something about The Empire Strikes Back and a couple of photos, like, you know, this Star Wars 2 is coming, this new movie is coming. And then, because sci-fi was so hot, the next section of the magazine was what other sci-fi type things are coming up for 1980. And there's a black and white shot of one of the Martians with the big V sort of a helmet thing, the face thing that looks like a big V.
Yeah, the mask.
Holding on with, I don't know if he's pointing or holding a weapon or, you know, handing a, you know, some nails to someone who's hammering something. I don't know what he's doing with his other hand, but I remember looking at that picture in black and white, and then it says, you know, Ray Bradbury's The Martian Chronicles comes to television, you know, in January, and da da da. And I went, what is this? What is this thing?
Yeah.
And so I watched it, and I'll tell you what my first, because you're going to remember, you know it much better than I do, and I haven't seen it in decades, but I dipped in here and there in a couple of bits. I remember being a kid and just wanting nothing Martians. I wanted all kinds of Martians and aliens. Every time there was a scene with humans doing whatever they were doing, I thought, well, some monsters are going to come in here any second, or a Martian or something, and they're going to pick this thing up. And I really didn't understand what the gist of the story was, that it wasn't, just because it was called The Martian Chronicles, it wasn't, you know, like a war or like Martians, you know, having meetings and stuff. So I was really disappointed as a kid, but I watched every night. I watched the whole thing. I know that for sure. And in fact, one of the episodes I think I watched because somebody wanted to watch something else downstairs. There was a black and white television up in my bedroom as a kid upstairs, when back then every house had two TVs and one was usually black and white.
Yeah, black and white. And black and white in my parents' bedroom. Yeah.
Yeah, and I had to watch like the second episode on black and white TV. But yes, I did watch it live. Did you watch it live? When did it hit Canada?
It hit Canada at the same time because we got NBC. True confession. I don't know.
Yes.
I got told about it. You know how you, like, sometimes you miss the first night? I got told about it on the second night by a kid named Jimmy. I was in the fourth grade, and I remember this really well. And Jimmy described it like it was Alien. Like, he made it like a horror. And I can honestly remember, my parents had a friend over that night, and the guy's like, I gotta get home and watch The Martian Chronicles. You guys should watch it. And I was terrified of watching it. I was really afraid of watching it. So I can remember being downstairs that night, and I would, like, turn the knob, and there'd be, like, a spaceship in Rock Hudson. I'd be like, and I'd turn it back. Because I don't know if I've mentioned this to you, but I was something of a wuss. And
Is this at the same time that you're watching the documentary Star Trek?
No, I'm much smarter by this point, but I am.
You've moved on. Okay, yeah. you've moved on by that. Okay,
but
all right.
I am a giant cream puff when it comes to horror. And I can honestly remember this. I think about 2 years later, I came home one night and my sister had just gotten off work and she was watching it on TV. And I sat down and I watched it for like an hour with her. And I remember thinking to myself, what the hell? Like, I was afraid of this? There's nothing scary in
right.
this. You know, like, they're just... And I actually will be honest with you. I watched it every night that week. Like, it was on again, like on one of the... You get those UHF channels that play old movies and nothing but...
Right.
And I remember I watched it like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday that weekend, and just I fell in love with it. I know it's slow, but it has got some really interesting points to it.
It does, and I think what I took away from it, and then I saw it again, like I said, like 20 years ago. I don't know, it was a video or something.
Yeah,
it's got a kind of it's kind of somber. It's got a moodiness to it. And yeah. The Martian stuff is kind of unsettling in place. But just back to what you said about that dread of, like, turning the knob and not know what's going to... Well, you know, back in the day, you turned on the television, and it was like, you know, it took a second for the TV to get sort of to warm up, and then you didn't know what was going to be on screen. But there was a movie that came out. I know you know this movie. I don't know if we've ever talked about it on the show, but there was a movie with Anthony Hopkins called Magic.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was a ventriloquist, and he had that dummy.
Used to make me poop my pants.
I have never been so scared in all my life as the commercials for Magic, and the camera would push in to the dummy's face, and whatever he was saying about bam, 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 and then it ended with him saying, "And now we are dead." And I saw it once or twice, and it gave me nightmares. So whenever I would turn the TV on around that time, I thought, if I'm alone, especially, I thought, if that commercial comes on, they're going to find this 9-year-old, you know, 8-year-old having a heart attack.
That's another film that came on when I was about 12, and I was so bored watching it. I was so mad.
Yes. Once I finally got over the trauma and many years later saw the movie when it was on TV one time, I was like, this is the thing that I was so afraid of. And the commercial was scarier than all of this put together.
It's and when you boring, see dull, Anthony dull Hopkins, that giant-headed, wooded, bobble-headed Anthony Hopkins. What's it called? Snaps? I can't even remember.
Is he Snap?
And
I thought it was like Lucky or...
It's so ridiculous looking. Yeah, that movie, that did not live up to its hype at all. And yeah, I share that. And I can even remember going to like a birthday party around that. And that's all we were talking about was that commercial.
Because, you know, here's the other thing. People forget that there was a time, and you know this because of the mountains of catalogs you have. You know, it was still a thing for kids to get ventriloquist dummies or to buy ventriloquist dummies as a toy. This was still a thing in catalogs in the 70s and late 70s, early 80s probably.
Oh, yeah.
It was still a thing.
Tommy Tuckers.
And once I saw that commercial, it just was like, you know, I never understood the fascination with... Because I think I kind of knew who Charlie McCarthy was. Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, because I know my parents, you know, we'd go up to Breezy Point, and there would be like film things, and they'd show one of those, or, you know, you'd see him on TV or
Willie
something.
Well, you had
Willie
Tyler and Lester, and you had...
Willie Tyler and Lester.
What's the guys off Soap, you know, the brother with the...
Oh, yeah, him. And then, of course, Wayland Flowers and Madam,
which
is... still mind-blowing that that ever got out of where it was from and got to television. It's incredible.
And Rod Hall.
But it was... That made... Rod Hall never understood that. To me, it was just an asshole on a couch on a talk show assaulting the guest with their hand. Like, just...
If I show my wife a picture of that, she'll be up on the ceiling. That is like a childhood trauma.
I don't know where the comedy is, because he would turn the bird's head slowly to look at the person next to him as he was talking to Johnny or something.
Yeah.
And I just thought, the guy's just going to hit you with his hand. It's just a dumb gag. I thought it was just a violent bird. I didn't really think it was funny. but yeah, so that made the fact that ventriloquist dummies were in stores and kids still had them.
Not just when in stores, they were in like magic shops, which were scary to begin with. And then you've got them in the dark. You know?
There's like magic shops they're going to find some there, like recruitment centers for wayward boys that want to join the CIA and get brainwashed and murder
a really
people.
Interesting article about Joel Hodgson, and he said that he was at his church or whatever. There was a ventriloquist, and then he went down to meet him in the basement, and the guy was like in the bathroom or something, and just in this dank church basement is a ventriloquist dummy staring at him, and it's just completely messed him up. Like, he's still kind of a little weird about it.
Well, Joel's he's a member of the Magic Castle. So years ago, we used to, you go with him. You can go to the Magic Castle if you've been invited by a member or for an event or something. So every now and then, some of us would get together, and Joel and his brother Jim and me and some friends, we'd go, and he's a big magic guy. He was really into it. I think he did ventriloquism and stuff. He had puppets and stuff, didn't he, for a while before
I think so.
Yeah, that all makes sense.
I have always kind of had I don't know how we got onto this, but it's fine. But
it's my fault, because you were talking about the trauma turning on marching ground.
Oh, yeah, no, but I totally, jumped on it, because magic is definitely something I share with you on that one. But we should probably talk about
terrifying.
Martian Chronicles. Have you ever read...
We should, I'm sorry.
Have you ever read the book?
Sorry. Well, it's funny you say that, because I think I did. I think I started to, and I noticed that the TV thing was very different than the book.
It wasn't.
Or fairly different. Here's what I remember. I remember the sequence, and one of the things that I think really unsettled me as a kid was I think it's the first episode when those astronauts, the second or third expedition, come to Mars, and it looks like their hometown. And like, oh, there's Aunt so-and-so, and there's my mom and my brother. And to me, that felt like an episode of Twilight Zone.
Well, that's an interesting point, because that's the thing I wanted to say about the book. The book is a loose narrative of short stories about Mars. It is not Dune. It is a
They're chronicles.
They're chronicles. Yeah. They're little short stories about Mars. And I don't know. I honestly don't think Bradbury wrote those as a this is one story. But TV decided, we got to do that. And I understand that, but you're right. It does feel like a Twilight Zone. And, at the time, I think Bradbury was adapted for Twilight Zone at least once or twice. And
I Sing the Body Electric, I think was a Bradbury thing that was in Twilight Zone. And this was, if I'm not mistaken, this was written by or adapted by Richard Matheson.
It was. Into that. This thing has an incredible, rich science fiction that everybody involved is into something we love. So that's the wonderful thing about this is this thing has a real what's the word I'm looking for? It's not lust.
Cachet.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So
you're welcome.
It is a real it's like a who's who of people we adore from the genre at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But you're right. I think
It's got.
I think the story you're talking about is the second expedition. I think it's called The Earthmen. And these are just Bradbury short stories collected into a volume. I was right.
Mm-hmm.
But The Earthmen was adapted by something else too. If it was Amazing Stories or the new Twilight Zone, but somebody did do that again.
You're right.
Yeah.
Why does that ring a bell now all of a sudden? Maybe it was the new Twilight Zone, the one in 85 that was on?
That could have been it. I just know that I realized I'd seen it before when I first saw it. And not every one of the short stories is adapted, and especially there's one that seems purposely omitted, which is just a short story about blacks in the South leaving the oppressive whites to go to Mars, which wouldn't really have translated in 1980 as well as it, you know, whenever Bradbury.
Oh, now that slight rings a bell.
Yeah,
and I remember Darren McGavin like opening a restaurant or something, yeah. Or he wanted to open a nightclub, or and then all of a sudden, you know, Roddy McDowell shows up, and I go, "Oh, Roddy McDowell, like, yeah. It's Cornelius! I can't believe he's in. Like he was." We talk about him how he would just show up in everything, and once he did. Whatever it was going to be better.
He made Fantasy Island better, and that was hard.
He made everything better, and the other thing that vignette about the astronauts. One of them was Nicholas Hammond, who played Spider-Man a couple years before.
Do you want to know why that's Nicholas Hammond? I think because
I'll tell you what I thought as a kid.
Yeah,
what? As a kid, my brain went, "Well, there's Spider-Man. He was in the awesome Spider-Man show.
Yeah.
He is going to work." Forever, of course they got him for this. They went top of the line. They got Nick with that's the guy. Of course they got Spider-Man. That's what I thought. I thought, oh, he's just going to be in shows forever now because all the time. Yeah.
And now you look at it, it's like Brady Bunch, Spider-Man, Martian Chronicles. Bye.
Sound of Music.
Yeah.
10-year gap. Spider-Man.
Brady Bunch. You forgot the Brady Bunch because he's in that famous
Brady Bunch.
Wait,
What's your thinking of why he did
it? Well, I know why, because it's in the credits. It's Martian Chronicles is a co-production between BBC and Charles M. Freeze Productions. And Charles M. Freeze Productions is famous for the Amazing Spider-Man television series.
No way.
Yeah.
It was a BBC thing, wasn't it?
Because it was a co-production.
There's a lot of Brits in it.
Mm. There's
a fair amount of Brits in that thing, and that would make sense. I don't think I ever knew that it was a co-production. That's cool.
It was adapted by Matheson, as you said. And, of course, Matheson...
Let me get this straight. Freeze is going, okay, the Spider-Man show, it didn't quite work. We thought it was going to be a massive hit. It didn't work. This Martian Chronicles thing, this is going to put me back on the map. It's, you know, pulling out all the stops.
Yeah.
Who do you think we should get for this one guy? Who's the guy that played Peter Parker in the show that didn't
sport.
Like? Yeah, we want him.
Yeah,
he's a sport. We can get him cheap. Yeah, put him in it.
Well, get this. Okay, Matheson wrote the screenplay. It was directed by Michael Anderson, Logan's Run, Doc Savage. Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay, that makes sense.
And one of the producers, Milton Sabosky of Amicus Films. So, I mean,
no way.
He has a heritage of all the crap we like. Not to mention the cast. I mean, yes, the big name star is Rock Hudson, who is not Mr. Sci-Fi, but everybody else is mildly related to a science fiction or a fantasy property in some way, shape, or form, especially the big names.
Yeah, so Darren McGavin.
Darren McGavin.
Night Stalker. What about Bernie Casey?
He was in Gargoyles, and he was also in The Watts Monster, or Dr. Jekyll and Mr. White. One of my favorites.
Oh, wow.
Roddy McDowell.
What about
absolutely nothing.
The British woman who plays, and I cannot think of her name, but she shows up in everything in the late 60s, early 70s, mid 70s. She's the woman, Joanne or Joan something. She's Hudson's wife.
Oh, Gail Honeycutt?
Gail Honeycutt.
Yeah.
She's just like a TV. She's a staple. She's just a TV staple. She's in everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's in movies like The Legend of Hell House. And I wasn't really banking on you going for Gail Honeycutt when I went through this cast.
Sorry, but I got a thing for Gail Honeycutt.
You have the aforementioned Nicholas Hammond. You've got Fritz Weaver. Oh, yeah, Fritz Weaver. I forgot about that. John Finch plays Jesus in this. John Finch, of course, is He's in the Michael Moorcock film, The Last Days of Man on Earth. Michael Anderson Jr. shows up. Michael Anderson.
Wait. Which Finch? What was the Finch?
John Finch.
Which guy?
John Finch, British actor.
John Finch.
He's in that really bizarre film called The Last Days of Man on Earth. And he's in The Vampire Lovers, too, and The Horror of Frankenstein.
Okay.
The Final Program, it's called. It's a Jerry Cornelius movie. It's post-apocalyptic, and it's very, very mod. If you haven't seen it, you might really enjoy it, although don't expect to know what's going on, because it's directed by Robert Fust, and it's a little weird. I like it.
That's all right.
It's bizarre.
I've got some 60s-era LSD that I'll take while watching it anyway. Yeah. So.
You know what really helps with it? Because
it'll make sense.
What even is worse is it has a Bourbon Street Jazz soundtrack, which makes no sense and doesn't work, but I still insist you watch it. Michael Anderson Jr. is in it. Michael Anderson Jr., of course, is related to the director, but I think his most memorable, well, the one we would remember is he plays Doc in Logan's Run, you know, the guy trying to give Michael York a new face.
Oh my God, I don't know if I... Wait, you're talking about the TV series, you're talking about the movie, Michael York.
Yeah, Michael York gets in a fight in the new you.
Yeah, I remember that. I don't know if I can picture the face of the doctor who worked on it.
Apparently, according to someone I talked to once, Michael Anderson Jr. was supposed to play Logan on the television series. But he was recast with Gregory Harrison when they found out he was connected to the movie. I don't know if that's true.
But he was grounded.
Yeah.
His dad grounded him, so he couldn't make it, couldn't be in the show. You just said something. Oh man, you just said something about Logan's Run, the music. Oh, it killed me. I was just gonna say something about Martian Chronicles and I lost it.
Oh.
Okay, continue. Sorry, continue.
No problem at all. Barry Morse is in it. He's of course from Space 1999 and The Fugitive.
Oh, Barry Morse is in it?
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding.
And he's in your favorite movie ever done, Shape of Things to Come.
Yes.
Canada's greatest science fiction film.
Greatest sci-fi epic ever to come out of Canada.
So that's basically, I mean, you've got other characters, other people like Bernadette Peters, and Joyce Van Patten.
Bernadette Peters!
Bernadette Peters is in it, yes.
Yes. These were big faces because,
these
were the faces that would show up in every TV thing or every variety special or, you know, Bernadette Peters was a fixture of stuff in late 70s. You know, TV shows and early 80s stuff. These are big names.
Yeah.
And then I think she just went back to Broadway. Just kind of disappeared.
Yeah, it's like Carol Kane. I really, really missed Carol Kane.
Yeah, and she all of a sudden show up in things.
Yeah, now she's on the Kimmy Schmidt show, and I'm very, very happy.
Yes, that's right. Good for her.
So, yeah, it is not... like the novel in the fact that it's trying to tie in all these short stories that aren't interconnected into a narrative. And of course,
the Rock Hudson narrative, right?
The Rock Hudson. The Rock Hudson narrative. And there's a whole subplot about World War III. There's a lot of changes done. And of course they're done for the story. And the show itself, I personally love the look of it. I mean, some might differ, but it probably isn't the most greatest look for a TV show, but I kind of like the style and direction they chose. I like the way first of all, where they filmed, I think they filmed in Malta, and Malta looks kind of like another world. The other thing I liked about it was... Yeah, they used like old school rocket ships, which we are now using again, oddly enough. But
I remember the font.
Yeah,
when it would say what year it was, and that was that late 70s. You know, you use the font. This is how robots spell their words. You know, that you just know it looks like their version of how a computer would, you know, write a note or something with that font. I remember that in the lettering. Oh, I know what I was going to say. The Martians, the husband and wife in the first part, who were they played by? Are they familiar? Do we know? Because they always looked familiar to me. I always thought that you remember the Star Trek with the I sent you an image of this. So I was watching it a few months back where the guy was wearing like a silver sleeveless top and like a neck, a little choker on his neck. And I said, who? I sent you a note, and I'm like, what is with the wardrobe department on this one? Like, how did this, let's get him in drag, but only halfway. The choker and then leave the hair.
The people at Space 1999 ripped that page out and put a big circle around it and said this.
Well, that guy, whoever that guy was, that's who I always thought the bald Martian was with the husband and wife thing.
I think I'm wrong.
I think I picture his face and that he was that. But I think they were British.
Yeah, I think a lot of the Martians were British. Now, that one I really wasn't 100% sure. I know the part of the story you're talking about. I know Terrence Longdon played one of the Martians, but I'm not sure who played all of the Martians. But you're right. I think they actually did use Brits because it gave...
Am I wrong? It gave them an air of, a little more regal or menacing or something. Am I wrong, or is it... I seem to recall it sort of going back and forth between something like the astronaut thing, where it's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. And then the other shoe drops at the end, and you totally understand why the Martians did what they did. And then he apologizes, but he's like, we've seen your wars. We know your future. We think we know why you're here. We can't let it happen. Like, okay, that's the beginning, middle, and end story. Then you have something like that story with the husband and wife, where she's having a dream, and she expects this guy to get off a spaceship and talk to her or whatever, and the husband goes and does something preemptively, and we never really know what happened or why. And watching it as a kid, I felt that it was kind of esoteric. Like, not that it wasn't linear, it's just that some of the stuff was kind of open-ended, and I think you had to be of a certain mindset, or have a different perspective, maybe a little older, to kind of understand that you're just getting a tease, and you're supposed to kind of think about the rest, sort of.
Yeah,
Right? Or is it more definitive all the way through, like the one with the astronauts on the planet?
I think what the whole thing is, in my opinion, is... It is kind of discordant. Like, they're really trying to tie it together with Rock Hudson, but Rock Hudson doesn't show up, I think, until the second hour of the first episode. Because, you have that first they had to open with this explanation that the Mars rover was wrong. Because, you have to... They had to make sure that you understood that Mars could support life. So they did that. I don't think that was needed. And it's long, and it's not the way you want to open a thing. Then they open with that story of the jealous husband. And then the second story is the second expedition, the one we talked about where they think they're home and they just eat the apple pie, get in their pajamas.
Yep.
It's really weird. And they
come on, I'll race you.
Yeah.
I'll race you to the house.
Yeah, we all, you guys are really gullible. Because if I pull up on Mars and like it's my house, I'm going to go, nope.
Well, I remember the guy, because this is, again, when I swear I rented on VHS.
You did. They came in three big clamshells back in the, they were really quick to get that to video stores.
Yes, and I did. Then I did rent it back when I first moved out here. It was on VHS, and I'm one of the guys going saying something like well, maybe it's an expedition that came up in 1910 or something. Or didn't he say something about like an expedition that came up and they settled, and now you've got generations of astronauts that have been here, however long.
Yeah.
But he says it at some weird point in our history. That's like, I don't think we had that technology back then to get up here and
It's incredibly strange and I think there's people that are dead that they're seeing it. That one doesn't really work for me. That episode, that part of it. Then you get to the third part of it, and I think that's one of the stronger bits. Is the Martians are now gone. I think it's explained that maybe some like chicken pox wiped them out or something like that. So you've got Rock Hudson and his expedition, and Bernie Casey loses.
Oh, wait, go back.
Yeah.
Go back. Say that again about, what was the thing about chicken pox?
Chicken pox wipes them out. I think that's what the
in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Or yes, in the
okay,
story.
There you go.
Yeah, so, yeah.
In the story, that was what was different. That was, yeah. when I finally read the book, that was the things that were different. So, yeah. I mean, do we know how Ray Bradbury felt about it when it?
Oh,
first
yeah.
Of all,
I was going to get to that.
Did it do well when it was on?
Well,
did
it doesn't matter.
Did it get
the numbers? It's a mini series. I don't know the numbers it got, but I think people watched it. I don't know if it was.
Yeah, I mean, that was the age of the mini series. Like, mini series were big deals in the.
Yeah.
Big deals in
there
the you know, mid
70s.
Three channels.
It probably made its money back, and it was such a co-production that it aired all over the world. And I mean, I own it on VHS because I bought a 4.5 hour VHS at Kmart a few years ago, 20 years ago, and then I bought it on DVD not long ago. So I think it did pretty well. Ray Bradbury, I have two funny anecdotes about him, because we got it through what was the internet back then, and that is Starlog. Before, you know, I think Starlog talked to Ray Bradbury a lot. I think he was pretty accessible to them. And
he was. He was always in the year-end issues when he put a note and a picture saying, "Happy birthday, Starlog." You know, so, I'm opening a bottle of dandelion wine in your honor or something.
They were asking him about what he thought of, like, I don't know if it was Battlestar Galactica or Star Crash or whatever. And I can't remember the exact thing, but he was just losing his marbles. And you know, a lot of those guys were. If you remember, like, Harlan Ellison used to call Star Wars a piece of shit at the time, too.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
He hated Star Wars.
Harlan Ellison was grumpy about something?
Yes, he was
no.
rude, too. He was
no.
bad language, yeah.
That doesn't sound like...
It's rare, like, but it happened, yeah.
Have you ever seen that yes. documentary? It's actually a great documentary.
Yeah, he's...
The
he's,
Dreams with Sharp Teeth?
Yeah.
The archive footage is amazing of him just Captain Hipster with his sunglasses and this, you know, guy that, you know, the Hugh Hefner of the sci-fi world. But yes, you're right, Starlog... was a conduit for these guys when it first hit, and then once Star Wars hit, all the guys sort of came out of the woodwork and said, "We were there first.
Yeah,
don't forget about what we did. If not
well,
for us."
I think they were kind of pissed off. It would be like being punk and your people are asking you what you think of My Chemical Romance, you know.
Avril Lavigne. Asking Joe Strummer.
Yeah.
Joe Strummer, what he thinks of Avril Lavigne.
So he was pretty curmudgeonly, and I remember as a kid not digging, like thinking he was a dick, but as an adult I kind of get where he was coming from. And he was saying that, oh, these shows are garbage, they look like old Flash Gordon movies and blah blah blah. And he said, when the Martian Chronicles comes to TV, I'm going to show everybody. So he was excited and buoyed by the casting.
Uh-oh.
And it was hilarious because a year later, after the Martian Chronicles came out, they asked him in Starlog and they gave him a little piece and he hated it. He absolutely
Oh, he
hated
did? Oh.
He called it boring and he said, the spaceships look like Buck Rogers with a sparkler and like... You know, the he was complaining about the effects, and I have always thought that.
But wasn't he a big fan of Something Wicked This Way Comes, the movie? I thought he was like a big proponent of that in Starlog. Like, this one got it right. Like, now they know what they're doing.
Well, it sounds.
I really like this.
I would hope he would, because that was a really good movie, and
you know,
he wasn't adverse to adaptation at all. But I just don't think he liked the Martian Chronicles miniseries. And, you know, that's a shame because while it is not perfect, and yeah, there's some parts of it that drag on, and, you know, like the Roddy McDowell Finding Jesus one, that is a little tough. But there are some really good parts to it. You know,
I might dive back into it just to... Hey, speaking of Starlog and speaking of miniseries and things like this, do you remember in Starlog, and I had to look this up online because I was flipping around one time not long ago, and I don't know if it was Sci-Fi Channel or somewhere was showing the miniseries called Childhood's End.
Oh.
And it was an Arthur C. Clarke thing or something.
Yeah.
When I'm watching it, I'm immediately going, why does that ring a bell? It's not just the Arthur C. Clarke, but why does that, what is it about that? And there's an issue of Starlog from like the late 70s where Childhood Then was going to be this big budget miniseries on television, either a miniseries or a movie or something. And all the artwork that they had in the article was done by Neil Adams.
Oh, wow.
Does that ring a bell at all?
No.
Yeah, because it's all about these an alien race that comes down and they provide for us and, you know, they're helpful and everything. And we don't know what they look like or who they are. And then, you know, when we finally see what they look like, he looks like a devil. Like they've got, the guy's got like a like horns and big wings and everything that we've feared all our lives. That's what these guys look like. And are they really our saviors sort of thing? And it was going to be this big miniseries or movie or something. And Neil Adams was doing all the art and it never happened. And then, you know, it took 30 some years for it to finally get made into, like a sci-fi type miniseries. And I ended up watching the whole thing, I think. And it wasn't terrible, but like someone who played the devil was like the guy that played the alien was like sort of the get that they got.
Oh.
For it. There's someone like, this isn't right, but it would be like a Tim Curry sort that shows up in a few scenes here and there and plays the big alien, you know, villain type thing. And I can't remember who it was.
Oh, but, yeah. That sounds actually interesting. Our version of the Sci-Fi Channel here is not that good, so we don't get things like that.
Okay.
Miniseries like that. Oh, yeah, that was done in 2015.
It was done in 2015?
Yeah.
Are you looking at it? Who is the... Did it list the big lead?
The only name I recognize is a guy by the name of Charles Dance.
Yes, Charles Dance. He's the big villain, devil guy.
Charles Dance is?
You know him.
Yeah.
He's most recently in Game of Thrones, but he shows up in loads of stuff. And
the many aborted versions of the Universal Monsters as the Avengers. He was one of the Dracula reimagining they did a couple of years ago. He was sort of like Sam Jackson of that. He was like this monster who was gonna, and then they switched that and they went to that horrible Tom Cruise mummy movie. And then I don't think there's gonna.
Well, then he was. He was the bad guy in The Last Action Hero.
That's right.
That was going to be his. That was going to be his big, you know, sort of break into Hollywood movies.
The more important action hero or villain would be the Golden Child.
Was he in the Golden Child?
Yeah.
He was in the Golden Child. Yeah. You're right.
Greatest movie ever made.
Oh my God! He was in the Golden Child, and he was also in a Bond film.
Really?
He was a henchman in For Your Eyes Only.
Oh, wow.
I think he had one line. But then ironically, I think the early 90s or late 80s, someone did a TV thing about the life of Ian Fleming or something, I think. And I think he might have played Ian Fleming or something. Maybe I'm getting that wrong. I don't know. But he's got some other connection to Bond or something. But I'm sure we'll get letters about this. But I've done it. I've gotten it. Totally wrong.
Yeah, we'll get letters mailed to our homes.
Right. With anthrax. So it probably did well. Was it the kind of thing that they were hoping to get a series out of it eventually? Like it might have grown into a series?
I don't
Or
think
it was just
so.
Going to be one and done?
It was a TV event. Yeah. It did get merchandise. How many TV miniseries get merchandise?
I was gonna save this bit until toward the end of this topic, but I can, since you brought it up, I can no longer. These figures are one of the things, one of the toy things that I am so fascinated with.
Oh, me
there
too.
Are times on the show we've talked about, because now the Mattel Flash Gordon animated toy line has become this coveted action figure line that people have finally woke up to and said, oh my God, this is a great, we got to get more of these, or, you know, whatever. And they do customs and things like that. But I always say that that's a really strange toy line to begin with, because it was a Saturday morning cartoon. I mean, how many Saturday morning cartoons got a toy line? Rack toys here and there, but an actual toy line of like a couple of replay guns and ships and, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 figures or whatever it was. There's nothing I can really point to that you had that with. And it was right in the sweet spot of, you know, 1979 with, you know, all the Star Wars figures and everything. It was that perfect time for these to come out. Next to that line, the Martian Chronicles thing is one of the weirdest. I've never understood it. I want you to explain it.
I will.
What they are, who made them, when they came out. Go. Everything.
Okay. All right. Well, first of all, I don't think this license was grabbed real hard by anybody. But where they went to was a company called Laramie, which is a Long Island toy manufacturer known for something called Rack Toys.
Woo-hoo.
Anyone who knows what Rack Toys are, I hope listens to this podcast. They are usually the low-cost...
Anyone who knows Rack Toys knows Brian Hyland.
Low-cost toys that you would find at the front of Toys R Us or in your pharmacy, Benjamin Franklin, or, you know, variety store. They are usually water guns with, you know, Fred Flintstone sticker on them. That was Laramie's. And I believe Laramie was actually a subsidiary of a bakery. So they would actually have a guy.
What?
Yeah, I think they were a subsidiary of a bakery, and it was like Tasty Bakery or something like that. So, you know, they had trucks on the road delivering bread and donuts and whatever they had. And so they had all these servicemen, and I think this was just another category for them to do. And the Laramie system was this sort of like Kodomatic system where, you know, peg one you put water pistols, peg two you put this, and, you know, that was the whole appeal of Laramie. Was it was a planogram that you, the guy maintenance, he did what is called DSD, direct store delivery. Mm. And this I do this for a living, so so this
that,
is this is not this
thing?
Is
that's fascinating.
Yeah, this is not Mego or Mattel or anybody, right. Anybody, this is not a big player. They're a player, but they're a player in the, you know, the 88 cent game. They don't have TV commercials or anything like that. I think Laramie's biggest thing was they did a bunch of roller skates. That was probably their highest priced item, and that's probably $3-4. So, you know, it's 1979. Star Wars toys have been on the market for about 18 months. And Laramie's got this hot property in the Martian Chronicles. And what do? They copy a Mego doll from 1975.
Wow.
Yeah, they took a Mego Star Trek alien, the Keeper, and the outfit on the Martian Chronicle dolls is the exact same as the Mego Star Trek Keeper. They've copied it, but they've done one in pink and orange.
Is it the guy with the head that Clint...
The blue
Clint
hat.
Howard played?
Yeah, the Clint Howard guy. Yeah, yeah. Tranya.
Oh my God, that's yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It's his robe.
Yeah. So
or caftan or whatever.
They put that robe on what could only be the worst doll body I've ever seen. Like, seriously, the feet, like, did you ever see a human person's foot? And, you know, that they can barely stand it. It's what's called blow molding. They're very, very cheap. And they put these kind of nice heads, and what I find funny is the three Martian heads they chose, which there's no names for the Martians, but they just did the Martians. One of them is Bernie Casey, who's not even a Martian.
What?
Yeah, Bernie Casey. Remember, he wigs out in the miniseries and murders.
Wait, aren't these three figures, three different masks, three different color robes?
Yeah.
But the masks come off?
No, but one of the Martians...
Oh, I see. I got you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah,
I thought you were saying the figure is a sculpt of Bernie Casey. I'm like,
no.
Damn, I gotta get that.
It's actually not a Martian at all. It's Bernie Casey, and, you know, the character Bernie
right,
Casey.
Right.
So, yeah, they decided to ape Mego Star Trek figures, used, like, they're so, I don't know how any of these survive. They're very cheaply made. Mego toy collector and author and a friend of mine, John Bonavita, once was playing golf in Long Island and met a former Laramie toy guy, and I think annoyed him at a golf clubhouse about, okay, tell me about the, because he was fascinated with the Martian Chronicles line, you know, and he said, tell me about that line, like, what was, why didn't you do a Rock Hudson? And the guy said, well, who'd play with a Rock Hudson doll, right? Which I thought was
really I would.
And then he asked him,
finally get a McMillan and wife playset.
Well, you'd have half of it. Where are you going to get the John Shuck? But
good question. I'd have to get a custom. You'd have to make me a custom John Shuck.
Yeah, I would have to take a Herman Munster. And,
but that's it. You get Munster, Holmes, and Yo-Yo, and the guy from McMillan and wife all in one go.
Wow, that is a powerhouse. You could also get that Klingon that no one likes.
That's right. From Star Trek 4 or whatever.
Klingon that sounds like Yo-Yo.
He's on the Mount Rushmore of sci-fi shows.
I can honestly remember whenever Star Trek, was that Star Trek 4? Sitting in the theater for Star Trek 4, and he comes on as a Klingon, and I'm like, hey, that's Yo-Yo. Like, he has all this
the
makeup.
The only guy in the theater going, that's Yo-Yo.
Yeah, but he's wearing all this makeup, and it doesn't matter. You know,
he's got a face made for radio.
Yeah, he's that. There's only one guy that looks like that.
That's right.
So,
okay, sorry. So, who would play with a Rock Hudson?
Yeah, the other thing he said was the entire purpose of that was that kids would immediately break those bodies and put the heads on Mego bodies. Like, they were just basically, those bodies were meant as just conveyances for you to put them on a better body. I don't know if that's true or not, but I always thought that was kind of funny. You know, just basically.
Okay, but I need to jump in here and ask some questions then. So you're telling me that these, a miniseries, a show that was going to be on three nights, 6 hours of television, somebody said, let's make figures because, you know, the market not only will eat them up, but, you know, the show is going to run for years so we can get rid of these things. The window is so tiny to move these things, provided anybody saw it. And they hit in 1980 in conjunction? Because I always thought they hit a couple of years after the show aired.
I honestly think they hit before the show aired, because I just read an anecdote. NBC shelved it. They wanted to have it for fall of 79. And I guess Bradbury was left alone with a reporter. And a reporter went, what do you think? And he went, boring. You know.
Wow.
Yeah.
To be fair, and I'm not casting aspersions because the man is no longer with us. Bradbury, there was a time toward the end of his life where Bradbury did a lot of appearances out here, like the mystery bookstore in Glendale would have a thing, or this other theater would put on a thing, and his helper was there, and he was in a wheelchair at this point, and there'd be a signing and everything. Bradbury liked his wine.
Oh.
He liked his wine. So I wonder if he was a bit of a juicer, you know, back then, and maybe, you know, a bottle of red, and suddenly he's you know, bad mouth in the show or something.
Well,
he might have been a little testy. But
I'm not going to huck a cinder block out of my glass house, but maybe. Yeah, I mean,
But I think most likely he was grumpy the way Ellison was grumpy about everything.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about this. We talked about Ellison's intros to the pinnacle Doctor Who book.
Yeah.
That rambling opening of his, where he just badmouths everything but Doctor Who, and he's so cool and so inside because he's seen so much of the show that most people have only seen a glimmer of, and he said it's better than anything ever in the history of sci-fi on screen or something.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, with Ellison, it's got to be, you know, if it's cool, he can't like it. It's got to be, well, you're missing out on this. That's kind of what his bag is.
But
Bradbury might have had a bit of that, too.
Clerk. Yeah, maybe. I mean, less of it. But they were friends. Yeah. They were good friends. So, maybe.
They were friends. And Bradbury and Harryhausen were, like, best friends. I actually was lucky enough to see them both at a bookstore in Glendale. And they did a talk, and got them to sign the Harryhausen, the hardcover Harryhausen book, and Bradbury did the introduction for that book.
Yeah.
So he signed the intro too. So I've got that too, which is pretty cool. So they shelved, and then Bradbury's like, boring, but, you know, they're trying to get it on, or they got it on later.
Yeah.
So these things, you think these things hit before, so do you think these things might have hit in 1979?
Yeah, I think they may have hit prior to it, but, you know, I think it's such a low gamble for a company that's going to sell them for, like, 88 cents. Like, these guys, that's why Rack Toy Man, that's why sometimes you look at something and go, like, oh my God! Somebody licensed Mr. Smith, a show that ran 13 episodes. Well, you know what they're out is a guarantee, which was probably quite low, and they're putting out Mr. Smith wallets and stuff that, you know, it's the label slapping at the best. So they printed a card with a picture of Mr. Smith, and they shove them out to grocery stores, and they're like they're what you call an elastic price. They're less than a dollar. Eventually, they'll go away. You know, it's not.
And something like Martian Chronicles would have also been in that sweet spot of kids grabbing if they couldn't find Star Wars somewhere.
Yeah, it's a space toy.
They grab whatever sci-fi a space toy, and yeah, they would grab that probably.
Absolutely.
And you know,
I mean,
be happy with it. So there's
difference.
Are there three of them or two of them?
There's three of them: pink, orange, and blue. I have two of them on the card, and then I have one of them loose. I really don't have much interest in getting the third one, because...
Really?
Well, I have the third one loose, but it's like the cards are generic. And, I mean, I've seen it occasionally on eBay, and, you know, somebody... like they go for, like, $200 each, $250.
I would have thought those would go for much higher than that, because it's such a weird... niche kind of thing, and there can't be a lot of them laying around.
There is, but then occasionally, like, somebody will have a case of them. I don't know why.
The logo on the card is in that same font, right? That Martian Chronicles font that the show was?
That's the funniest thing. The card art is absolutely gorgeous. Like, it's
way better. And they've got the faces on there, right?
Yeah. And there is one other piece of merchandise that I've always wanted, because I guess I don't know if they gave a poster out to the stations, or I'm assuming there's also a theatrical, because I guess in France they did a theatrical version too. But there was a poster, I saw it once on eBay. This is back in the days when you only got like that little picture, and it was absolutely amazing, and I just didn't have the money at the time to buy it, or, you know, the probably more or less the money and the desire to own it. But I thought, you know, I'll get it next time.
The inclination.
Never seen it again, and it was really cool.
So you hear that, everybody? Brian's on the hunt for the Martian Chronicles promotional poster.
The hunt. Yeah.
Somebody has to know where this thing is.
Yeah, there's actually.
Hey, you never know. We might as well get a commercial in this thing while we're doing this, because people find stuff for us.
Actually, the number one poster, if I was going for a promotional poster, which I am, would be for Invasion UFO, the TV movie version of the Gerry Anderson TV series. But Martian Chronicles would be a strong number two.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, there we go.
Anyone, keep your eyes peeled.
Write me at posters,
so that
PO Box, Melonville.
Remember that? Was it Rogowski? Rogowski in the back of Starlog?
Yes, Howard Rogowski. Yeah.
Send a self-addressed stamp envelope to Rogowski.
Rogowski.
P.O. Box something something. New York, New York.
Do you know that's...
And there was one that said... there was
the back issue.
It said, Still Things is still the best.
Oh, the guy sold stills.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And the guy... And it was called... And every time they had a classified in Starlog, it said, Still Things is still the best. that was the heading of it. God, when I think about those days and the how primitive, but how exciting it was too. It's still exciting to get packages and to get things, you know. And like, I finally tracked the thing down, whatever. But back then, it was, if something came from overseas, it was like, you know, like
I still
came by carrier pigeon.
I still want to scan, even though I don't know how interesting it would be. I have, like, journals from, like, 1987 where, you know, it'll say, money for Dinky Eagle sent. And then I draw, like, a little eagle every day. And then, you know, money for Romulan sent. And I draw a little Enterprise. Like, yeah, I was a player, by the way.
You flip a couple pages and it's like, it's been 2 weeks since I sent away from the Eagle.
Yeah.
Still no sign of it. Getting worried.
No, you know what? No, because you would actually, you'd flip through it and it'd be like March, and then you go, April, Romulan arrived! And you're like, crap, I was patient. Now I'm like tracking things on my phone, like, son of a bitch, where is my, you know?
I used to have a Doctor Who pen pal in...
Oh, yeah.
I think I told this story, but I think he thought I was like a grown man.
Oh yeah, he just
was like 12, and he just sort of stopped writing because
I just picture him in a yard with all your letters and some lighter fluid.
Yeah, first I picture him in a pub. Picture him having a rough day at work in a pub, and go, I got to go through my mail, and he's having a pint and he's looking at, and then it's like, now that we've gotten through all the bullshit after a year, I think one of us said, wait, tell me more about, like, what's your thing and what are you into? And what do you, you know? And then he had told me his info. And then I said, well, I am 13. And I, and then the letters just started to slow down. But before that, he was one of my main contacts to get like promotional postcards and annuals that he had, like Double Dub and things like that. And when he would send a package, which now is probably pretty creepy when you think about it.
Yep.
But when he would send a package, it would be like, in a letter, he'd say, okay, I'm sending something off probably this week. That's the only way I'd know that he sent it. And then I would, you know, it would be like, what, 2-3 weeks to get something from the UK? It took a long time to get something. Or when I'd mail away for stuff to England, you know, and I'd put the cash in that envelope to get back issues of Doctor Who Monthly and things like that, and, you know, Bag of Jelly Babies and, you know, something else, and that catalog, you'd send away, and it would be like 5 or 6 weeks, it seemed, before you got something.
Yeah.
You know, and you're right, now it's like your package has been sent and we're like, where is it?
Yeah,
it's been 24 hours. Yeah, those are the days, man.
I bought a jacket from LA recently, you know, and I had it in 4 days. But I tracked it every day. Like, and it wasn't like I was dying to wear it. It's just, that's how convenient we are these days.
I've had small packages. I recently had some luck with some Kenny Everett stuff. Oh, by the way, I saw the thing you posted about the Buck Rogers bendy that I sent you. I didn't know you posted that. How cool is that?
Yeah, I love that
thing. So you wrote that. I had no idea that you posted that. That's awesome. Thanks for the shout out.
Thanks for the doll.
I was on a bit of a Kenny Everett kick, and I found some Captain Premen jewelry made in 1979. Yeah, like the little ship that was in the Captain Premen cartoons, and then different characters on these little pendants and pins and stuff. And the card says Premen, almost in like Superman font, and it's from 1979. Like, they come on cards, like little cards with holes in them.
What?
Anyway, what? You know, two of them I got.
There was a British annual.
Yeah, remember how like all the...
Right?
Okay, one more time?
Wasn't there a British annual for Kenny Everett?
There are two or three Kenny Everett annuals. I've got two of them. There was a Captain Premen comic book. Because Captain Premen was a thing he started doing on the radio in the mid-70s, like after Star Wars. And it got, because he would do the voices and stuff, and that's all it was. And then they put out a graphic novel sort of. It's really bizarre. It's really pretty adult and strange. But then when he started doing the video show in the late 70s, Cosgrove Hall, who did Count Duckula and Danger Mouse, they did the animation in the middle of the show for these Captain Premen cartoons. So all the voices that he would do on the radio, they now did this space cartoon, and it became a thing. And then there's the big bendy figure that I have that you know about. There were a couple annuals. Now I found jewelry. There were a couple of records, albums that were made with adventures on them. But I ordered these things and, you know, from England, did the transaction, you know, on eBay. They were to me in less than a week.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little envelope, but it got to me in less than a week. these little guys.
I think the thing that kills me about the Captain Kremen merchandise that I've seen is that his, you know, it's this is marketed to kids, and his sidekick there has like huge boobs with nipples sticking out, and it's just we don't have that.
In fact, I'll go even stranger than that is. Because, you know, he does hit the Captain Kremen voice. He does, her name's Carla, and he does the German doctor on the ship with him. He does his voice and everything. There's a Viewmaster set.
Yeah.
That I've never found. There's a Viewmaster set that was made with Kremen and Carla on the packaging, and she's, nothing has been censored.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Hey, kids,
it's insane. I won't say it on the air, but let's just say that it is not the most outrageous thing that Kenny Everett got away with.
No.
On that show. There's a name of a character that he did on the show that it took 3 years before the BBC caught on and said, wait a second. And then he changed the character's name. He changed the character's name into something equally offensive, but they didn't catch it.
Oh,
but it's unbelievable that he got away with it. But yeah, I found this thing. They showed up in less than a week. It was amazing.
Yeah,
it's absolutely amazing. Sorry, back to Martian Chronicles.
Yes.
So you don't think they ever thought this was going to be like a series?
No, I don't think so. No, this was a prestige production.
Yeah, and it played. It was big. And what's the thing about McGowell and Jesus? I have absolutely no memory of that story.
Well, a lot of the stories...
McDowell goes looking for...
I think it's McDowell or Fritz Weaver sees Jesus. You know, there's... Like I said, the stories go in and out as to what... They try to connect them all, but they're all over the place. You know, you have... And they do some clever connections. Like, one of them is a family lost their son from the second expedition, Michael Anderson Jr., and he comes back, but he's a Martian. And I think that was redone a few times in other shows, too. And then I think the McDowell parts are usually the second episode. And that's one that I find a bit draggy. But it is about a religious... I think they're priests or monks, and they see Jesus. And I think Jesus is supposed to be a Martian again. You know, it's the Martians can shapeshift and be seen as other things, and they play on that quite a bit, and that runs.
Okay, now that kind of that's ringing a bell now.
Yeah,
the shape-shifting thing is ringing a bell with the Jesus thing. And then McGavin goes up there to open a nightclub or something, or a restaurant, or a casino or something.
McGavin's character is originally in the third expedition, and he's kind of a jerk character in that. And then they do this whole thing where he opens up a hot dog stand on Mars, and he's wearing ridiculous
which is again playing to the which I even as a kid at the time I knew it meant, oh look, here comes man, because I knew this from Twilight Zone.
You know
Sterling's attitude toward man, you know, either being stupid or committing, you know, acts of war or whatever. I knew what they're trying to say was that this you know, perfect pure place was being invaded, and the first thing they're going to do is put up a hot dog stand.
That's one of the things that is not the best. The effects could have been better in this thing, is that they have this ambitious chase scene with these Martian wind ships, and it really, it's not some great model work, to be perfectly honest with you.
Now I got to watch this. I got to find this and watch this.
Like I said, I do like the design aesthetic of the show. The Martians look amazing. I do like the old-timey rocket ships, but, you know, that's me. The mileage varies on that. But, yeah, some of the effects could be better.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they tie the whole thing into World War III. Like, everybody goes back home for some reason. They abandon Mars, and then they talk about that. And then the ending is, you know... Rock Hudson and his family are the new Martians, but I don't know how they're gonna.
Yes, and don't even tell me. I remember this like it was yesterday. They look in the water.
Oh, it takes forever.
And the kid was saying, "How come I've not? How come I? how come I've never seen a Martian? And I watching it as a kid, I kept thinking, here they come, the Martian people are going to come and, yeah. you know, do some stuff. And he points in the little pond or something and says, there they are right there.
Yeah.
And he points to the reflection of him. But see, as a kid, I still didn't understand. I thought, does that mean that you've been taken over by Martians or something?
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
you're,
a little
you know,
yeah.
it's a little, but you know what I mean? Like, are you just, you stay there long enough and you start, you know.
Totally agree.
You know, it some of it just was kind of, you know, out of my league at the time, I think.
It's a bit slow.
Didn't quite get it.
It's not that long a story.
Yeah, a little slow.
Like, I think the story that they filmed, they based that on is a very short, little quick story. And I'm not wrong, or I might not be right on this, so please correct me, but the part that I remember in the book that made sense was the dad does that, and then the story ends with saying, and more ships began to land. Basically, they were colonizing Mars. I mean, these stories were not connected in the book, but in the miniseries, the Earth just blew up. There's no one left on Earth. So, who is Rock Hudson and his family going to repopulate Mars with? Like, it gets a little weird. Which doesn't quite end on the same hopeful note that the book does. I could be wrong on that, but
I don't remember that.
Yeah,
I don't remember. I do remember when I looked back at it 20 years ago that I was surprised how 70s and kind of flared the yeah. costumes were, even for 1980. Because, you know, yeah. you forget that 79, 80, there were still big collars, still pretty
oh, yeah.
flared.
Oh, yeah, right. The NASA expedition, they've all got butterfly collars and turtlenecks on, which I think is right. adorable. But, you know.
Yeah, it's right out of one of your catalogs.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. They're all wearing Botany 500, you know. Again,
Botany 500 for your next Mars expedition.
Yes, but you know, there's something I just
it's your jumpsuit.
I guess there's a charm to that now, you know, for me, anyways.
Yeah, there is, because it's, you know, Star Trek is lucky that it you know that those female costumes are very dated, obviously.
Oh yeah,
and very much of a time, but it lucked out in many ways that it's. That the design was streamlined the way it was.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if the affection would quite be there if it was, you know, where Buck Rogers is, you know, we've talked about this, it's 25th century, and everybody's got their shirts unbuttoned to their navels and wearing gold jeans and, you know, tight trousers and, you know.
Insanely little, tight trousers.
Little
half,
little,
like Jill, I can never
Gay Terrio boots.
Yeah, yeah. There's. I can remember Sci-Fi Channel used to have a little, like, you know, stinger that said, "You're watching Buck Rogers," and it was Gil Gerard jumping like off two steps, and it looks like it hurts him. You know, like it was supposed to be this action sequence. He looks like he's gonna die because, you know, his spray painted pants are on. You know,
we. The Martian Chronicles thing was like, you know, one more sci-fi thing to watch. Like,
yeah.
We would, you know, I was obsessed with Battlestar Galactica. Like, I had the coloring books and the toys, and like every time it came on, to me it was like, this is almost like Star Wars every week. And then what? There's a Flash Gordon cartoon and Buck Rogers. Like,
yeah,
this was right in the pocket of all that Martian Chronicles hits. And I think that's probably what I was expecting. I probably was thinking. So I think that, you know, when I first read about it and knew what it was, I thought it was going to be, you know, more lasers and spaceships and robots and all kinds of things. And it was definitely more adult in tone. And it was, it probably thought it was going to be this, let's get ride the wave of what's going on with sci-fi stuff. But we're going to do like one for adults, sort of.
Yeah.
I mean, don't you think that's kind of what the aim was?
Like, I think for me, it's almost the last gasp of, like, the early 70s sci-fi that, you know, 2001 inspired all this ponderous science fiction. You know, you got Zardoz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's sort of spaceships and aliens, but they're trying to be a little more somber and adult and grown up. And it's one of the things that, you know, really plagues the first season of Space 1999, where some of the episodes, they get a little dull. They get a little slow-moving. And, you know, you can be fast-paced and interesting and somber all in the same boat, guys, you know. So I think, for me, that's one of the appeals of it. It's almost like the last time we saw that, because by the time the 80s kicked around, science fiction changed. Some might say for the better. Jury's out on that one. But we didn't see anything like that again. Would you agree with that?
You're right. We didn't. I would, because the next thing that we, especially on television,
yeah.
I felt like it was trying to bring an adult tone to something and almost kind of say there is a bit of a Twilight Zone vibe to this, because
yeah.
you don't think of Twilight Zone as being for kids, or I mean, it's definitely a science fiction show, science fiction fantasy show, but it's not, you know, fun and games and stuff.
No.
And it felt like that's what they were trying to do. And I think the next thing that we would get on network television that would be in that vein was V, with that miniseries, which is very bubblegum. It's still very Twilight Zone, but it's also very bubblegum.
Well,
with, you know, ray guns and
Kenneth
lizard
Johnson
people.
Was
and,
very good at providing a mix, though, because it is an excellent science fiction allegory story. But it's exciting and interesting. You know, he didn't try.
Yes, it moves. He's got room for commentary and parody and things like that. And it's a slam bang kind of action thing too. It's a good balance. But something like Martian Chronicles, you're right. I don't know when a network did something like that. You know,
that may have killed that Arthur
I don't know.
C. Clarke
I'm sure people,
adaptation too. Who knows? You know.
That's what I'm thinking now that I sort of think about it. That's what I'll bet it did, because that was going to be a big budget thing. I think it was going to be a miniseries. I love when we do this and we throw this stuff out there to people that are listening, and then people get on here and write. No, it was this thing.
They
and
go
this
to
is what it was going to be and whatever.
Star logs and correct us, which is great because I don't want to.
Yes. everyone, go over to your bookshelf, grab your stack of star logs, and start going through it to find out what the hell I'm talking about. But I think you might be right. I bet it was going to be after Martian Chronicles, and they killed it.
Yeah.
But
I
remember that Neil Adams' artwork was really cool. And clearly, you're looking at you know, production artwork where you're going, there's no way this is going to make it to television. Like,
yeah.
This is so ambitious. It won't make it. You could do it now fairly easily.
Cheaper, yeah.
You know? And I'm sure there was a budget thing, too, with Martian Chronicles, where you could only, you know, it made sense to do it the way they did it. I got to revisit it. I got to go back to it. I know it's something that you really love.
I really love, but watch
it you have
every
any, you,
5-6 years. So
the which one? The what?
I watch it only every 5 or 6 years, though. Like, I don't crank that out, because it isn't a terribly exciting, and it's hard to watch 4.5 hours of anything. But
well, and there's a lot of, I think, half the fun is the nostalgia of remembering it and and knowing it from way back. And yeah, but I watched it when it aired. I was really keen.
I was too scared.
You know, I didn't hate it or anything. I just, you know, when you're a kid, you kind of start to tell yourself, it's like looking at a painting in a museum. Like, how long am I supposed to look at this?
Yeah.
Am I supposed to get this or not? And that's, that's kind of what it was. Like, I think I get it. It's really cool.
Have I ever told you that I tried to watch Solaris as a kid? I thought it was Space 1999.
No.
And I remember, like, this Space 1999 is really boring. Oh, yeah.
This is not anywhere near as cool as the Star Trek documentary.
Yeah.
Put that back on.
You're never living that down, am I?
Nope. Nope, that's never going away.
And on that note,
never going away.
We'll leave you folks for another 30 days. Thanks for listening. And
the footage is so crisp.
Yeah.
How do they get this footage? It's so crisp. It's like they're there. Yeah. No, that's never getting old.
Nope.
That's gonna be, if you die before me, that's gonna be at the memorial. I'm gonna get up to the mic and poke a pin in the whole ceremony and go, did anyone know that Ryan thought Star Trek was a documentary series in real time?
The problem with that is it'll still be funny. You know.
That's right. That's right. All right, good All stuff, right. man. I'm glad we did this because I know how much you like it.
And, oh yeah, this was a lot of fun.
As always, we love hearing from you guys. And any suggestions, anything that you know, every now and then we sort of you know come up with nothing and we think, what should we do? And then Brian was like, oh, marshmallows. I'm like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
But we're always you know open to ideas and stuff. If there's stuff you want to hear us talk about, or and of course anything you want to find on eBay or any cash, just send cash.
Just send cash or too. Checks made out to cash, and we'll cash them.
Keeps the show. It'll keep us nice and fresh.
P.O. Box, Mellonville,
yeah, perfect.
All right.
All right, good stuff, man. We'll do this again sooner than later. Thanks,
Absolutely.
Guys.
Absolutely. See you. Bye. Bye.